The peace of Christ be with you. Before we listen to the word, I want to ask a question. And I want to ask you to answer it honestly. Is there anything that someone else has that you really, really want? Is there something that someone else has that you really, really want in such a way that it does something to your soul? Something that you are so envious of that you can barely even confess it to yourself? Is there anything in your life like that, honestly? Well, if there is, I want you to listen to this story. We jump back into Genesis. We are at chapter 37. Now hear the word of the Lord. Jacob settled in the land where his father had lived, the land of Canaan. This is the story of the family of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was shepherding the flock with his brothers. He was the helper to the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, his father's wives, and he brought a bad word, bad report of them to his father. Now, Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other children because he was the son of his old age. And he made him a long robe with sleeves. Nice. But when his other brothers saw him, But when his other brothers saw that his father loved him more than all his other brothers, they hated him, and they could not speak peaceably to him. Now once Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him even more. He said to them, "Listen to this dream that I dreamed. There we were, binding sheaves in the field, and suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright. Then your sheaves gathered around it and began to bow down to my sheaf." And his brothers said, "Do you indeed to reign over us? Do you indeed to have dominion over us?" So his brothers hated him even more because of his dreams and his words. Then he had another dream, told his brothers, "Look, I've had another dream. The sun, the moon, and the 11 stars bowed before me." But when he told his father and his brothers, his father rebuked him and said, "What kind of dream is this that you have had? Are we all to come, I, your mother, and your brothers, and come and bow down to the ground before you?" So his brothers were jealous of him, but his father pondered these matters in his heart. Now, his brothers were shepherding their father's flock near Shechem, and Israel said to Joseph, "Are not your brothers shepherding the flock at Shechem? Come, I will send you to them." Joseph said, "Here I am." So he said to him, "Go now and see if it is well with your brothers and with the flock, and come bring word back to me." So he sent him from the valley of Hebron. He arrived at Shechem, and a man found him wandering in the fields and asked him what he was looking for. He said, "I'm seeking my brothers," he said. "Tell me, please, where they are pasturing the flock." Well, he said, "They're not here. They've gone away. I heard one of them say that they're going to go down to Dothan." So Joseph set out for his brothers and found them at Dothan. And they saw him coming from a distance. And before he came near to them, they conspired to kill him. They said to one another, "Here comes that dreamer. Come now, let us kill him and throw him into one of the pits and say that a wild animal devoured him. Then we will see what becomes of his dreams." But Reuben, when he heard this, delivered him out of their hands, saying, "Let us not take his life." Reuben said, "Shed no blood, but throw him into one of the pits in the wilderness, but lay no hand on him, so that he could come later and rescue him from the pit and restore him to his father." But so when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the long robe with the sleeves that he wore. And they threw him into the pit. Now, the pit was empty. There was no water in it. Then they sat down to eat. And looking up, they saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming down from Gilead with their camels carrying gum and balm and resin on their way to carry it down to Egypt. Then Judah said to his brothers, "What profit is there if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay a hand on him, for he's our brother, our own flesh." And the brothers agreed. So when the Midianite traders came near, they drew Joseph out, lifted him out of the pit, and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver. When Reuben came to the pit and saw that Joseph was not in the pit, he tore his clothes, and he came to his brothers and said, "The boy is not there, and I, where can I go?" Then they took Joseph's robe, and they slaughtered a goat, and they dipped it in blood. And they took the long rope, the sleeves, to his father and said, "This we have found. See now whether it is your son's robe or not." He recognized it. "It is my son's robe. A wild animal has devoured him." And Jacob, Joseph, no doubt, is torn to pieces. And Jacob tore his garments. He put sackcloth on his loins, and he mourned for many days. And all his sons, all his daughters tried to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted, saying, "No, I shall go down to Sheol, to my son, mourning." Thus his father bewailed his son. Meanwhile, the Midianite traders sold him in Egypt to Potiphar, Pharaoh's official, the captain of the guard. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. It begins with telling us that this is the story of the family of Jacob. Jacob, the younger of Isaac's sons. Jacob, the contemplative, the thinker, the schemer, the cook. Jacob, the one who outwitted his brother Esau out of his birthright. Jacob, the coward who fled Esau's wrath. Jacob, who got tricked into 14 years of service from his uncle Laban. Jacob, who showed favorites. He loved his wife Rachel more than his wife Leah. Jacob, who wrestled with the angel of the Lord. Jacob, who was wounded in the hip and renamed Israel. Jacob settles back into the land of his father and his father's father, Abraham, the land of Canaan. And the story of the family of Jacob, interestingly, begins with the story of Joseph. Joseph, being 17 years old, was shepherding his father's flock with his brothers. Joseph, we know, likes to talk behind his brother's back. He's a tattletale, and no one likes a tattletale. Joseph, we know, is Israel, Jacob's favorite son, for he is the only son of his beloved and favorite wife, Rachel. Joseph, we know, is given a particular piece of clothing to signify that he is special, that he is set apart, that most of his father's love is directed towards him. And we know that Joseph has a kind of big mouth and swagger. He has these vivid and fantastic dreams, and he's not shy about getting up in the morning and around the breakfast table telling us exactly what those dreams were. "Did you know that I had a dream last night that we were all out in the field working together, binding sheaves, and my sheaf came up, grew upright, and you all came around and started to bow and worship before me? What do you think about that dream?" "I like that dream." "You like that dream, older brother?" And I imagine his older brother looking at him, eating his Wheaties and putting the Wheatie bowl down and walking out with a grunt. Jacob stood by watching while his brother Joseph, or while his son Joseph, the favored one, was ostracized from his other siblings. The brothers go out to shepherd their father's flock at Shechem, but Joseph, the youngest, their father's favorite, the one with who wears the robe, is left behind. Joseph is always left behind. And I imagine his father wanting him to be included with the other boys, wanting him to have some special relationship, said, "Hey, aren't your brothers out shepherding? Why don't I send you to them, and you can go find out how they're doing and bring word back to me." So he sends Joseph, his youngest son, out alone, without any protection, all by himself, to go find his brothers, hoping maybe, just maybe, his brothers would welcome them into the family jokes, their identity, their good times around the campfire. He goes down to Shechem, but they're not where they said they would be. And he finds a man, and he's a little bit lost. He says, "Where are my brothers?" "Oh, they're down a couple miles away, down at Dothan." So they head on down to Dothan, and his brothers are camping around the fire, and they see Joseph coming. And he's got that long robe on with the sleeves that his father made for him. And when they see Joseph coming in that long robe, something triggers in them. All of their anger and all of their envy and all of their resentment. We don't know who spoke first, but we know that they must have looked around, for they hatched a plan and they said, "Enough. Let's fix this right now. Let's kill him. We'll hide his body in one of these pits. We'll say that a wild animal did it. And then we'll see what becomes of his dreams. Then we'll see how good Joseph really is." Now, his older brother, probably cooler among the brothers, talks them out of trying to kill him and just putting him in a pit, and then he would come back later. Then Judah, the more fiscally prudent of the brothers, said, "Hey, let's make some money. We can sell Joseph to these Ishmaelite traders as they head down to Egypt. Kill two birds with one stone. We get rid of Joseph, who we hate, and we make a little money." So that's exactly what they did. They took Joseph and they handed him over to the Ishmaelite traders as they were heading down to Egypt. And they got rid of their brother. But then they had to go back home and tell their father, Jacob, what happened. They got rid of Joseph, but the robe they kept. They wanted the robe. The robe they needed. They dipped that robe in blood, and they gave it to his father. Said, "Hey, is this the robe of your favorite son?" And Jacob looked at the robe and was inconsolable. Inconsolable. Jacob was dead. Or Joseph was dead. And I can't help but wonder if he was inconsolable because he blamed himself. Maybe it was his fault, and maybe it was Jacob. For it is he that sent Joseph out unprotected, all alone, into the wilderness to find his brothers. It was Jacob who also gave him this robe. And I can't help but wonder, I just can't help but wonder, when the brothers came to Jacob and gave him the robe, Jacob, who was a schemer himself, if he looked at his boys and knew that they were scheming, that they were lying, I can't help but wonder if he knew what they had done. And if he did know or sensed it, whether he still blamed himself, because he's the one who set up the resentment to begin with the robe. I just can't help but wonder. Now, this is a powerful story about the family of Jacob, but I think it's a powerful story because I think it's also a story about us, a story about what happens to us when we let jealousy turn our soul bitter in such a way that it forces us to conspire someone's harm. And it all happens with having something like a robe affect us so greatly that it turns our soul inside and out. It all hinges around this robe. This robe is what pulls the story's tension and drives it forward. And what does the robe mean? Now, there was an early church father named Augustine, lived between about 356 and I think died around 430, give or take a year on either side. Augustine was one of the first and formidable theologians of the church, and he wrote this book called On Christian Doctrine. And he said that when he wrote this book in order to help the church understand how to read the Bible. So you have Christendom starting with the conversion of Constantine and the church becoming the official state religion around 325. And now you got all these people flooding into the church and they're all supposed to start reading the Bible, but no one knows how to read the Bible. So Augustine writes this little book on Christian doctrine in four books. And in book three, he spends a lot of time talking about the difference between things and signs. Now stay with me. This is all going to make sense in a second. Things and signs. Things are just that. Things like a rock, a tree, a robe. A rock is just a rock. A tree is just a tree. There's nothing more about it. It's just a thing. But a sign is something different. A sign signifies a greater reality. A footprint in the sand signifies that somebody walked by. Smoke going up signifies that there is a fire. A sign represents that there is pointing to another reality. And we know this, right? We have signs all the time. You come to a four-way stop and you see a stop sign, and it's more than just a red, flat piece of metal. It's telling us, dude, slow down or you might die. Got to pay attention to the signs. Now, what this matters for the Bible and interpretation is Augustine is telling the church that when we're reading the Bible, we have to be aware between the difference between things in signs. Sometimes in the Bible, things are just a thing. A rock is a rock, a tree, a robe is just a robe. But other times, these things are also signs. A rock isn't just a rock. Simon comes along and Jesus calls him Petros, Peter, rock. A rock isn't just a rock. A rock is now a sign of a greater reality. And how do you know, says Augustine, when a thing works as a sign in the Bible? And you should interpret that thing as a greater reality. Well, Augustine says that when a thing, like a robe, is working in the story to drive the story forward and to help us unpack the story, that thing is now a sign. That thing now has a larger reality that's pointing us to. And I can't help but wonder if Augustine's wisdom is a guide for us as we engage and enter into this story of the family of Jacob. I can't help but wonder if the robe is more than just a robe, but a robe is a sign signifying a greater reality. The robe keeps coming up all the time, this thing. And obviously, there's something going on with the robe, that this robe represents something. But what? I mean, on the surface, it's pretty clear, right? The robe represents the favoritism of their father Jacob to the youngest son Joseph. The robe represents that one person is set aside, one person is chosen, one person, dare we say, is elected. And it drives us crazy. It's like a grain of sand on the eyeball. It is just irritating. Because we don't like one person getting more attention than the other. It's unequal. It's just downright undemocratic. But I can't help but wonder if it goes deeper than that for all of us. That their brother's response to Joseph and the robe was disproportionate. They wanted to kill him. Something about that robe turned their soul inside and out, turned it bitter, and they were red with envy and jealousy. And I can't help but wonder if that robe is speaking and also signifying a greater reality of their brother's heart and of our heart and of the human condition. Because jealousy is really at the root an expression of pride. Pride, says C.S. Lewis in Mere Christianity, is articulated as the greatest sin. Pride is what leads to every other vice and every other sin. It was pride all the way back in the garden, the appeal of the serpent to Eve and to Adam to say that if you eat of this, you'll be just like God. He was evoking their pride. And pride, says C.S. Lewis, is essentially competitive. It's competitive by its very nature. Pride takes no pleasure in having something. It only takes pleasure in having more than the next person. It's that I wanted to be the big noise at the party that makes me so mad when somebody else wants to be the big noise at the party. See, our pride is in competition with everyone else's pride. And when that happens, when somebody else has more than us or has something that we want, that pride becomes really competitive, and that competitive begins to do something in us, and we begin to imagine possibilities of how to harm another, or how to beat another, how to compete with another. And all of a sudden now, we're not talking about just the rose, we're talking about winning. We're talking about us succeeding and getting past getting what we most want in life. And I can't help but wonder if the robe is not only a sign that signifies Joseph as the favored one, but it also is a sign signified that the brothers are jealous because they want to be the favored one. It isn't just that Joseph had the robe, it is that they think they should have the robe, that they want the robe. Now all of a sudden we're having a different kind of conversation. It's turned back now on us. And we got to do some soul searching about what we really want and what we're really desiring. And we have to be honest with ourselves. Because there are lots of different kinds of robes, aren't there? Many kinds of robes in the world. And my robe might be different than your robe. You might desire the robe of popularity. You're just so mad that somebody has more friends than you do on Facebook. Just drives you incredibly crazy. You just got to break that 1,000 mark barrier. The robe may be to you somebody's got more money than you, and you wish you had that. And it just makes you so mad that other people can just breeze through life without having to work 3 jobs to get through college. The robe might be somebody getting more playing time than you, or just even making the team, and you feel like you should be on that team. You should get the playing team. Maybe the robe is a grad school application that another person got in, and you know in your heart you got just as good of grades as they do, but you didn't get in. It just makes you mad. But you don't say anything. Just be cool about it. But inside you can feel it. Maybe the robe is that one of your friends got a ring in the spring, and you wish you had that ring. You wish it was on your finger. And you're so happy for her. Oh, congratulations! But as soon as you get back to the dorm, did you see that ring? It wasn't very big. I didn't like it. I don't think this is gonna make it. And you start chapping away and chipping away, and all of a sudden you're running them down. You see them go, oh, congratulations! But they got the rope. You want that rope. The robes can be lots of different things. Lots of different things. For me, the robe was worn by a guy named Rob Harrison. Rob had my robe. And the robe was intelligence. Rob was really, really smart. I grew up with Rob from about 3 years old and on. Rob was in my Sunday school class, and Rob was a borderline genius. I mean, he was goofy, but he was really, really smart. Is really, really smart. He had like a photographic memory. Right? I mean, in third grade, he had read War and Peace cover to cover and could quote large pages of it. We would go to Sunday school and we would have Bible memorizations, and he would have like the Gospel of John cover, and I'd be like, dude, Jesus wept. And I was just so mad. He had what I wanted. It wasn't just at Sunday school. I went to this particular school where they'd bus all the smart kids in. right? And I was this, I had a speech impediment and I read slowly. And so I had to go to special reading classes and speech therapy classes. And they try to cover this up by saying, can Trig go down to the yellow room? And everyone knows what the yellow room is, right? The blue room is like where, you know, all the challenge kids went. Rob's going out. They got the little jackets and they got gold stars. But I'd meet Rob out on the playground. Didn't matter how smart you were on the playground, right? In my heart, I hated Rob. Didn't like him. Because he had what I wanted to have. He was smart, and I wasn't. I wanted to be smart. It took me longer than other kids to learn how to read or to speak clearly. And I had a funny name to go on top of it. It was rough. But in my heart, I knew that he just made me mad. And I remember just saying mean things about him when he wasn't around. I remember that I imagined sometimes what it would be like to have him in a headlock. I remember just feeling when I'd see him, all of that just kind of anger welling up in me because he had what I wanted to have, and I was jealous. But in the heart, at heart, at root, that jealousy was a form of pride. It wasn't that Rob was smart. It's that I thought I should be smart. It wasn't that Rob had all these good grades. It's that I really wanted these good grades. And he had what I wanted to have. And I was essentially just competing with him. And I think it's important to name our robes because if we don't, what happens? What's the consequence? We listen to this story and we learn that the consequence is that it begins to break apart families. It can break apart friendships. It can break apart communities. If we don't identify the robes and admit that we have them, that it is in us, then we are in danger of letting that jealousy, that envy, and that pride turn our souls bitter and sour, and it will ruin us. The resulting consequence of this jealousy with the brothers is that they throw Joseph into the pit. And I can't help but wonder if the pit is another sign, is signifying something else. That the pit isn't just a hole in the ground, right? The pit is a place where we're trying to get rid of our problems. Or a pit is where we go for revenge. And I think that there are lots of ways to do it. For Rob, I was gossiping about him. I was speaking about him. And I was throwing him into the pit. It wasn't physically I was doing that, but verbally I was, emotionally I was. And it's easy for us to take our jealousies, if they are unconfessed, and to throw the people into the pit in one form or another. Which is why we have to recognize them, because it's silly, really, to try to throw our jealousy into a pit, for his brothers to throw Joseph into the pit, because they're not really throwing away the fundamental problem, right? They're not just throwing away the one who is the favored one, the one who is elected. What they're really trying to throw away is their own sin, their own pride, their own jealousy. But that's the kind of stuff you can't throw away because it is in us. And we need something else, some other kind of help to get rid of that problem. We can't just throw our jealousy away in a pit. Because the thing that happens with sin that is in us is it doesn't just stay there, right? As we read through this story, they got to come back to their father. And they begin to see the ripple effect of what happens when we don't deal with sin, with the jealousy and with the pride in our life. See, sin never stays with us. It has arms, and it just keeps going and going and going like a ripple from a rock thrown into the pond. It just exponentially grows. That is the danger of sin. So what do we do with this? Well, I want us to encourage us as a community to do a simple thing in three movements. The simple thing is this. We need to confess it. Name it and confess that this jealousy, this envy is in us. Confess it to ourselves, first of all. Because if we don't confess it and name it to ourselves, we're just living a delusion. And these envies and these jealousies will just eat away our soul in such a way that we will be incapable of loving another. The second thing we need to do is we need to confess it and name it to another person. Maybe to that person who we're talking behind their back about and to say we're sorry. It isn't just enough to confess it to yourself. You need to go and to seek reconciliation. To say, hey, I'm sorry. I felt this way about you. I can't help but wonder if the story would have been different if one of his brothers had taken their young Joseph aside and said, hey, you know, when we were at the breakfast table and you said this about your dream, this is how you came across. And it really offended me. And it put me off. Now, I know you may not have meant it that way, and maybe you did, but it bothered me. And I want to tell you, I think that was wrong, and I need to confess to you that I was just resentful. I can't help but wonder if one of the brothers had taken aside their dad, Jacob, and said, you know, Dad, that may not have been the smartest move to give Joseph that robe that you made him. I know you meant well, but all the other brothers are getting really resentful, and they're alienated. And every time we want to go out, we just leave him behind because we can't stand him. I can't help but wonder if this was a family that could actually confront each other a little bit, might actually have made a little bit more progress. I remember the night that I became a Christian. I was 13 years old at Camp Moran. Camp Moran. And I remember the night distinctly of I was being chased by the hound of heaven, and I could not resist anymore. And I remember staying and giving, promising all of my life and all of my love and all of my heart to Jesus. I had no idea what that fully meant, but I knew that I was called to this. And I remember going back to my cabin, and I remember getting in my cabin and sitting down, and I wrote in my Bible what had happened, the time and the place and what this meant for me. And so I was so full of joy and a sense of relief and confusion in this big mystery, and I remember looking up and looking across my cabin, and there was Rob with his big glasses saying, hi. And I knew I needed to do something. I wasn't ready to do it right then. It's first night, I got to work into this a little bit. But weeks later, I remember catching Rob aside and saying, Rob, I'm sorry. I was really jealous of you because you're smarter than I am, and I like to be smart. And I remember when I told him that, he did something amazing. He said, I forgive you. And, you know, I've always wanted the friends you've had. And I got to enter into Rob's life and realize it wasn't so easy being that smart kid and being a little goofy. It wasn't easy for him to sit alone at the lunch table all by himself. And it wasn't easy to be a guy reading War and Peace in third grade. I mean, who does that? And that started a friendship with Rob. That lasted this day. Just this last week, Rob gave me a call out of the blue. He's now a pastor in Indiana. He's a Hope College graduate, met his wife Sarah here. I was the best man at his wedding. He said, hey, we're on spring break and we're passing through Holland and can we get together? And so we went down to New Holland and we got a big pizza and I met his three beautiful kids. And I can't help but wonder if I might have missed that, if I wouldn't have actually taken the time to tell Rob I'm sorry, to put my pride away. Rob's still much, much smarter than I am, and he's beautiful. And I've had to recognize that it's not a competition, that God has gifted him with his gifts, and God's gifted me with my gifts, and I don't need to be jealous anymore. And the reason why is that not only do we confess it to God and to each other, but we are to another. We confess it to God. And when we confess it to God, we hear that we are forgiven. For our God is the one who gave us these gifts. Our God has all given us a new robe that says we are chosen. We are chosen in Jesus Christ. See, when we confess it to God, we come to a table, a family table that is large. A table where we are reminded that we are healed and we are forgiven. That we come to a God of grace. See, this table is what Augustine might call a sign that's pointing to a larger reality. This table is a visible sign of an invisible reality. The God of grace, the God who has elected Jesus Christ to be for us the Lamb of God that takes away the sin of the world. Jesus Christ is God's robe. And in Christ, through the mystery of the Holy Spirit, we all wear that robe. And our identity is hidden in him. And this is a table that promises that reality. For this is the table of that reality. There is something going on here that is larger than any of us can imagine. And so tonight, if there is a robe that you really want, that's turning your soul inside and out, that's an irritant like a grain of sand on an eyeball, I want to encourage you to confess it to yourself. Confess it to the other person that maybe is the source or represents that robe to you. But above all, tonight, confess it to God and come forward and receive his grace. For his grace is sure and his grace is true. Would you pray with me?